The New Immigrant Experience in Maine. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, in the years since 2011, every county in Maine has seen more immigrants move into the county than people moving out. In some counties, the numbers are pretty big. Cumberland County has seen more than 5,000 new international immigrants. And in some counties, the numbers are small. Aroostook County gained 211 immigrants. But every county has seen positive migration numbers. And this means that people, often from very far away, are leaving very different cultures to become new Mainers and new Americans. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What is it like for these new Mainers? Do they find Maine welcoming or do they encounter prejudice? How are they becoming part of their communities? Today we'll hear from three leaders in Maine's immigrant community. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. About 3.5% of the people living in Maine were born in another country. That's about 45,000 people. What is the new immigrant experience like for them? Today, we're going to discuss how Maine welcomes and integrates immigrants into the greater community here. Joining me in the studio, Fatuma Hussein. She is the founder of the Immigrant Resource Center of Maine, which is based in Lewiston. Alan Nahimana is executive director of the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center. And Reza Jalali is a long-term Maine resident who came to Portland as a refugee more than 30 years ago, right, Reza?
Yes.
And he's an educator, writer, and community activist. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you, or is someone you know, a new immigrant living in Maine? Do you think Mainers are welcoming? Do you have questions about their experience? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Reza, can you give us an overall picture of immigrant groups in Maine today? What range of countries are they coming from? And are they mostly in Portland and Lewiston, or not really?
Well, now, in fact, they're spreading to other parts of the state. And you're right, it used to be just Portland and Lewiston as the two primary communities, but now we run into immigrants in fact, small towns in western and northern part of the state, as well as a large concentration in the mid-coast area.
Is the reason for that is that there are job opportunities there, that housing is less expensive, or are there other reasons?
Well, the face of immigration has changed in Maine. I mean, many people assume that all are refugees, and that's not the case anymore. In fact, two-thirds of all new Mainers, as we like to call the immigrants, are professionals who have come as immigrants and not as refugees. So many of them have come to study here and then have stayed back. A significant number of them have been invited by large companies, by the state of Maine. They're skilled and well-educated, and we're in need of them, so they've come to Maine. And of course, we have those who, just as my own case, came here as refugee, as a displaced person coming here in search of safety, security, and human dignity.
And you came from Iran 35 years ago, is that right?
35. Thank you for aging me.
That's okay. You were little, right?
Yes, I was only 2 years old.
And Fatuma, you also came here as a refugee. When I first met you, you had founded the organization United Somali Women of Maine, and that has grown and grown. Tell me about what you're doing now and how it is that you're little sort of group, band of volunteers has changed.
Yes. When we first met, I think we had a small office. I was part-time and maybe I had two volunteers. Today we're about perhaps 12 and maybe 20 plus volunteers. We are based out of Lewiston, Auburn, but we do have an office here in Portland. We have grown in regards to the populations that we're serving. When we first founded the organization, we were serving Somalis. Today, we're providing services in 14 different languages. And like Reza said, the face of migration has changed. In the early, 2000, Maine was seeing a lot of refugees. Today, there's less and less refugees in terms of refugee resettlement, but you tend to see more and more migration around asylum seekers and professionals who are seeking for jobs. And one thing that I just want to mention quickly is, just like any other person, immigrants also search for opportunities. They search for safety. They search for, you know, their dreams. And therefore, we do broaden out. It doesn't mean that we come and then, because we're resettled in Portland or let's say Lewiston, that's our stop. I think we branch out. And so you tend to see we are all over the state. We provide a lot of services around system advocacy, community education, service provider training, and then direct service. A lot of it's related to gender-based violence, but we do provide direct services. And English is minority in our office. When you go to our office, we've got 10 different languages going on at the same time.
Wow, that must be exciting and also a little intimidating to be there with 10 languages being spoken at once. Elaine, tell us your story, how you came to Maine and the role of the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center.
Thank you. I think I'm the youngest comer in the United States, the youngest in terms of how long I've been here. Because I came in 2010. I've only been here for 8 years. Compared to 35 years and for tomorrow, how many years again?
Almost 30 years.
Yeah. So I came as an asylum seeker from Burundi, and I got my asylum approved in 2011. In 2013, I was hired to be the coordinator of the Maine Immigrant Rights Coalition. In 2017, January, I started a new position with the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center. Well, I'm still until now. So the center, the idea of the center came from a realization of the challenges immigrants go through and how there are services provided by mainstream organizations, but also some community-based organizations. At that time, I had recruited within the coalition, but I was so fragile, no infrastructure to work, little, no funding at all, that needed to be empowered. So the idea was to create a space, a center where people could share offices, could share meeting rooms, and could share infrastructure.
Elaine, I remember seeing you speak, I believe, at the Space Gallery in Portland, and you talked about some of the things that those of us who have lived in the U.S. all our lives might not think of that are really hard for an immigrant at first, especially a new immigrant, to get their head around. So give us some examples.
Language. I think the barrier number one to any immigrant integration process is the language. When you have skills or no skills, whatever you want to do, you need to be able to speak the language. Some of the things are understanding how the system works in the United States, depending on where you come from. I mean, people who come as asylum seekers may have been in their present life exposed to the world, but I think it's been more difficult for refugees who may have been living in a refugee camp with very limited resources and coming and find themselves in America. So I would say there are differences depending where you were when in your life before coming, that I can't really point the name on what's going
different
on.
Different experience for different people and different challenges for different people. I want to ask each of you, especially because you've been here different lengths of time, how welcoming you think Maine is on a personal level, and then because you work with so many others, what is the experience of new immigrants in Maine, Reza?
Well, but we have to acknowledge that there's a history of intolerance in Maine, that Maine seems to have this love and hate relationship when it comes to immigrants of the past and present, and hopefully that would stop with the future immigrants. So in Maine, we seem to have this pull and push. We want immigrants when we need them, in our mills, in our factories, and now in our offices, in the service sector. And then we don't like them when they buy a house and come to live next door to us. So we have to acknowledge that and honor the hardship that the immigrants of the past faced. To give an example, that KKK, the Ku Klux Klan, was very active a century ago in Maine, and in absence of a large African-American community, they targeted the Roman Catholics, mostly the Irish, the Italians, and the Jewish residents of Maine, and the Italians, and so on and so forth. And in fact, they managed to burn down a Roman Catholic church in Bath, Maine. And so Maine has had this troubled history, and then at the same time, personally, I have been received really well. I've been given a new lease on life, and a chance to rebuild my life so I can write, I can speak freely and without any fear. So I would say it's a mixed bag. And at times, southern part of the state seems to be accepting, evolving into even becoming welcoming, where we know that in other parts of the state is still intolerance or touching in on tolerance, which we don't like that. Tolerance is like tolerating the mosquitoes in summertime in Maine. We want Maine and the whole state to become accepting and welcoming.
And Fatuma, you've lived through a lot in Lewiston. How are things now? How are things today?
So obviously Lewiston-Auburn has a history of, having a lot of influx of Somalis without nobody knowing. So we just showed up out of nowhere in the middle of winter, very cold. And here we were, finding ourselves in a place where we had no place to return to. It is very imperative and very important for Mainers to recognize and acknowledge that the state of Maine has changed some 20, 30 years ago. This is not a change that's recent to us. Is there resistance? Absolutely. But we've done a lot of work on the ground. Although we've come from a very painful place that was so racist and so blunt in terms of eradicating Somalis out of Lewiston-Auburn, we now have a very solid, good foundation to work from. The work that we've done in the last 15, 17 years has enabled us to be neighbors, to be friends, to move forward. Are there issues today? Absolutely. I think Lewiston-Auburn has, this poverty, this substance abuse, I mean, the social issues that are not necessarily unique to us, but exist. And when the workers and the mills and all of that went away, and the French-Canadian history and all of that, that bigotry existed, and that wasn't addressed. And then we came out of nowhere. So when we came out of nowhere, because of the basis of where people are coming from, it was easy for people to target us. It was easy for people to just look at a Somali woman who's so visible because of her religion and what she's wearing, to just attack them and call them names. And therefore, it's my strong belief that communities have to converse. They have to educate each other. They have to work together. Because the reality is we're not moving. We're not going anywhere. This is our home. And therefore, whether you like it or not, you have to recognize and basically smell the coffee and say, our student population in Lewiston schools are 40% people of color, students of color.
40%?
So, yeah, that's a very huge. We produce children for the state of Maine. I have 8 children of my own. What else do Mainers want? This is the workforce, and this is the future of the state of Maine, and we must all work together.
And I want to get back to the discussion about workforce in just a minute. But Fatuma, I want to ask you, because when you say we showed up out of nowhere, and tell me if I have my years right, but between about 2004 and 2010, 6,000 about people from Somalia, and many of it is secondary migration from somewhere like Atlanta or Minneapolis, came to Lewiston, Maine. And the mayor, and for those of you who didn't live in the audience, who didn't live in Maine at the time, the mayor wrote a letter asking you to stop for a while. There were some really, really ugly incidents. It seems as though those are no longer happening. Those are no longer in the news. And what I'm wondering, and that's why I asked you, how are things today? Is it because of this active effort and dialogue? Or do you think it's just because, boy, we've all lived as neighbors now for more than a decade. We know each other. Our kids go to school together. And guess what? We've gotten to know each other as human beings.
I think it's both of them. I think it's because right now the migration that we see are from Burundi, Rwanda, Congo, Angola, Djibouti. You see some Somalis coming, secondary Somalis coming, but not as much as when, we first started showing up back in 2001. That said, once we had the open letter from the mayor, and the mayor, in his words, saying we are maxing out the resources of Lewiston. Lewiston City does not have resources. And that we should tell the Somalis around the country not to move to Lewiston. Again, these are his words. Then the KKK showed up. And then many people in Lewiston and around the state came to our defense and said we need to support the Somalis. That was our turning point. that was what you see. The foundation that you see today is started in, you know, that cold day in 2003, where we said more than 5,000 people in front of, you know, Bates, that we were not going to welcome bigotry. We were not going to be racist. We were better than that, and we needed to rise above that. And so since then, there have been dialogue, there have been community celebrations, there have been events, they've been working together, partnerships, people who must work. And then on the ground, just common people who are neighbors to each other. We're working together. We're eating together. Children were, if your child and my child are friends and I'm Somali and you're white, you cannot beat that. And so once the community saw that, and us, quite frankly, Somalis are very proud people. They rub it in your faces. We're all over the place. We've got community centers. Lisbon Street has a lot of our businesses. And all of that, everybody was doing their little piece, whether it was within the system or the communities at all, you know, faith-based organizations. Today, you see all of that coming together. And what you see is you cannot see a place like Lewiston Auburn, the service providers and community members, whether it's ethnic community-based organizations or churches or mosques or systems, working as good as Lewiston Auburn.
Alan, what about your experience? You've come, as you mentioned earlier, later than Reza and Fatuma, and you came into a community that was already, Portland was already quite multicultural by the time you arrived in 2011. Was your experience different than theirs?
Yeah, very different. But my first job was in a call center. So when I'm always been asked if men has been welcoming, I say, in my first job, I think it was a shock. In a call center, people responding with my accent, just asking me if I was a real person, or asking me if I was from India, because my accent was not what they expected. These are people calling in for different reasons. It was for a company I was at a call center. So what I thought was a plus, coming already being English literate, was now backfiring on me. My accent was not good. So I resigned that job 2 weeks later, because I couldn't stand being insulted every day on the phone. I didn't think that was paid enough to be insulted all the time. So then I went into another position, and I moved on, and I became the coordinator of the Men Immigrant Rights Coalition, which had at that time committed organizations, but mainstream organizations, and a very, very small number of immigrant-led organizations. So things kept changing, and I would say, today, coming in America as an African immigrant, my first realization was like, hey, you know what? I'm black. I found out that I was black when I came here. Because
you came from a place where everybody had similar skin color.
No, being black in America has a different connotation. So finding out all these socioeconomic bias and everything that goes with the color of your skin, I never had that. So I was like, okay, I'm black. I'm realizing I'm black. So how do you leave your blackness and then again your African immigrant origin? How do you navigate this? Because I don't have any stigma from discrimination or segregation. So you say, okay, you know, there always be people who don't like me, who never like me. So I'd rather work with those who actually are okay to work with me. I'm fine to be a minority, but again, actually looking for allies. I think we all come with some kind of resilience that if you are pushed back there, you look on the other side who is ready to welcome you and you work with them. And over time, people have discovered that they can actually live in Maine. People I found here are still here. Their kids study here. They graduate here. And now people are buying homes here. So in general, I would say in any other place in the country, there's always people who are anti-immigrant. But the bottom line, I would say Maine, I think, is welcoming. If you look at even the numbers of people who come in and leave the state, it's not as much as we should think. I think it's a nice place to raise kids and to live. And the stigma will disappear over time through collaboration, through unlikely partnerships, through opening up. And actually, I think, when I hear Fatuma and Reza, who have been here before me, actually, how do you change the community you live in? You don't change by attacking. You don't change them by pushing back and pointing fingers at those who are not good. It's actually accepting that people may have their own backgrounds, and actually living together, working together, caring about the same issues and work on those issues together actually creates these bonds that you see people ready to accept Maine as a multicultural society now and diverse.
We still haven't talked about workforce, but we have to take our first break. When we come back, some of your comments and questions. We're talking about the new immigrant experience in Maine. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Lamy Wellahan Shoes, committed to reducing greenhouse gases at all their locations throughout Maine, because what's good for the environment is also good for business.
They say context is everything. At All Things Considered, we take the time to put things in their proper place, delving into the why and the how of a story, not just the who, what, and where. We pinpoint what's truly important and grasp the ideas that bring the news into focus. I'm Audie Cornish. Join us every afternoon for All Things Considered from NPR News, because the facts matter.
Coming up from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio. You've heard the tones before here on Maine Public Radio and perhaps also on Maine Public Television. Maine Public is the designated primary source for the entire state of Maine emergency alert system, which we transmit to all other stations for broadcast to all listeners and viewers all around the state. This is a valuable and important public service tool to help inform, alert, and warn citizens when situations warrant. And Maine Public's statewide infrastructure enables it to fulfill this vital task and public service.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, how immigrants are integrating in Maine. Join me in the studio, Raisa Jalali, an educator, writer, and community activist who originally came to Maine as a refugee. Fatuma Hussein is founder of the Immigrant Resource Center, and Alan Nahimana is executive director of the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post on our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now is Catherine Besteman, who is a professor of anthropology at Colby College, and she is one of the organizers of Making Migrations Visible. It's an initiative with the Maine College of Art. Catherine, thanks for calling in.
Thanks so much for having me, Jennifer.
As I just mentioned, you've helped organize a huge collaboration on the theme of migration, and it has ties to the story of immigrants in Maine. Can you tell us about it?
Of course. So Reza, Alan, and Fatuma are all involved as well. It's really a pleasure to be able to join them on this show today. The Making Migration Visible initiative is a statewide initiative to showcase events offered by community partners and affiliates throughout the Maine in ways that are responsive to the desires and interests of their own constituencies, their own audiences, around the theme of migration. And it's based out of an exhibition that Julie Poitras Santos, my collaborator, and I have co-curated at the Institute of Contemporary Art at Mecca here in Portland. That exhibition features the work of 14 artists, three of whom have close Maine connections, and the others come from all over the world, about the theme of migration. But then in conjunction with that, we've invited partner affiliates from throughout the state to mount parallel exhibitions of their own. There's films, there's lectures, community conversations, community dinners. Reza is organizing an evening of poetry and music. Alan's Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center will be having a magnificent open house. Fatuma is participating with the Becoming American series in the Lewiston, Auburn area alongside Reza. So there's just a multiplicity of events from starting from now, running through December 14th, all over the state.
Great. And we will post a link to that with a list of some of the events and exhibits, or all of the events and exhibits that people can see or take part in. Catherine, you've done research involving immigrants for many years, but also about attitudes toward them. How do you feel that Mainers overall view immigrants?
Well, that's a loaded question, Jennifer, I think.
Hey, you're a professor. you can handle it.
I feel really proud of Maine in this regard. I mean, I think Maine in many ways is a model for the nation. I think, as Fatuma has mentioned about the process that Lewiston Auburn has been going through, I think that many people look to what has happened in Lewiston as sort of a paradigmatic example of what's happening in many smaller towns and communities across the United States, where immigrants arrive who may or may not have been invited and go about the business of establishing lives and enrolling their kids in school and joining the workforce and making the community theirs. And that's the story of humanity. That's the story of how communities are built and remain dynamic. I think Mainers, for the most part, with some notable exceptions, recognize that and understand that migration and mobility is the history of Maine. It's also Maine's future.
You may have just answered this question, but I'm wondering what you hope that the Migrations Initiative will accomplish. What are you hoping that folks come away with after taking part in it?
I think a greater understanding of the ways in which they themselves are also constituted by migration and mobility, both by recognizing how our landscapes, our communities have been built through human mobility, how their own heritages are likely marked by mobility, how being mobile is an aspect of being human. To be a human being is to have the right to move. So I think seeing migration from kind of that vantage point, rather than through the sort of language that's currently ascended in this country around, are immigrants good or bad? Do they hurt or help? Are they a drain or a benefit? That's not helpful language, I think. So that's what I'm hoping. We can change the conversation. We can change the perspective.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Catherine. Catherine Besteman is with Colby College, where she is a professor of anthropology. And again, we will post information about the Making Migrations Visible initiative on our website and Facebook page. Catherine mentioned also the Becoming American effort. Reza, both you and Fatuma are involved in that. Tell us about that.
Well, Becoming American is another initiative started by Lewiston Auburn Museum. And very much in the same line as Catherine mentioned, it's about shifting the conversation, changing the paradigm, and also creating community connections. And as of now, we've shown a couple of films. I've been honored to be a moderator for the post-film discussions. And it's fascinating because I did one event at in Lewiston, and it was about a shared story of all of us. It was about all of us. This is the collective story of all Americans. This is about the poetry of America and what makes America so magical, the whole story of immigration. And sitting in that room and talking to our neighbors and creating this understanding that we have more in common than what separates us, that this is about all of us, and either we fail together or we succeed together.
On the line with us now, Amanda Levine. She is the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Specialist with the City of Portland. Thanks for joining us, Mandy.
Thank you. It's an honor to be invited.
I hear we are in the middle of Welcoming Week in Portland. What is this?
We sure are. Welcoming Week is being celebrated this year from September 14th to the 23rd. This is the second year in a row that the City of Portland has participated. And it's essentially an opportunity for employers and organizations and governments like the City of Portland to demonstrate that we are welcoming to newcomers and that we're welcoming to everyone who calls our community home.
Was this event created because there was a need for an event like this, or is this more of a celebration?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it was recognizing in large part the diversity of the customers that we serve, as well as the diversity among our staff. And so what we have the privilege of doing is each year hosting different events, predominantly interactive events, that allow us to celebrate immigrant community contributions. So actually, Reza, who I know is in the audience or in the studio right now, was one of our guest speakers last Friday. He and his partner, Liz Greeson of Maine Intercultural Communications Consultants, did their fabulous Demystifying Islam program, which debunks many misconceptions about Islam and provided historical background and context to the religion and how it's often misjudged today. We hosted a potluck for our staff that allowed members of our staff to come together and to share stories and to break bread together and to celebrate the diversity among us. So a lot of different ways that we can creatively celebrate our diversity within the city of Portland.
Amanda, thanks so much for calling in. That's Mandy Levine with the City of Portland, the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Specialist. Going now to an email. This is from John. Maine needs to recruit immigrants, just as we did previously, in order to bolster Northern Maine's economy 100 years ago. Then we targeted Swedish immigrants by actively soliciting and supporting their coming and staying, even establishing a new town, New Sweden, in Aroostook County. What better way to get what we need in Maine than to think strategically and target recruitment of new immigrants to the countries and regions having populations most qualified, willing, and able to relocate here? We need to bolster our aged population with younger folks. A huge part of this conversation is about how Maine is projected to not have enough workers in the very, very near future, and that immigrants can fill those roles. But what about John's idea of targeting certain countries? Is that something you all think is a good idea?
Well, I think in general, immigrants who come to Maine happen to be young in their prime working age and well-educated, highly skilled. And the numbers back what we argue that, for example, 37% of Maine's immigrants happen to have a college degree or more compared to the 30% of native-born Mainers. So this is all good news for Maine, that rather than targeting one region or a country or an area in the world, we should be welcoming all those immigrants who come who are highly educated and skilled and young. We need them. So I would argue that it's no longer an issue of doing the right thing or the moral or ethical thing, but welcoming immigrants is an issue that it's about survival of this state, which we all love.
Elaine, I've seen some statistics about work employers and their some of their hesitancy, or some, actually, I shouldn't use the word hesitancy. The numbers show that employers hire immigrants at a lower rate than non-immigrants. What kind of work is being done to change that, and is that changing?
So, first of all, to go back to the question that Reza just answered, I think people who are recruiting immigrants for workforce purposes will do it no matter where people come from. They already people doing it with H-1B visa. You have a big number of individuals working here from specific countries because they probably come with some skill set in that particular area that the company needs. But at the same time, you think about the whole potential of the existing immigrant community. Most of the people I know who come from different countries who have skills, many of them work in home care industry, despite their skills. Why they go there, most of them, the language number one is language, is English. So I think what should be done and what we hope that many, many more institutions will be investing in is in language acquisition. Number two, how do you have a program of reskilling people who come with skills to the needs of the man's economy? What I think is missing, it's a kind of high-level conversation and a strategy as a state instead of keeping initiatives to individualized institutions, organizations. It's easy to set up a nonprofit and come up with, this is what I want to do. But how does it respond to the big picture? And I think today with a conversation going high at the state level, at the city level, with establishment of an Office of Economic Opportunity, and with what we're seeing now with major businesses in the community investing into immigrant-led organizations, the center is mostly funded by corporations. There is a need to take the conversation to a higher level, and actually to have all of us as stakeholders actually work in collaboration. The Portland Adult Education is a great institution, but we need to make sure all of us that it has enough funding to respond to the demand. You see, and we go beyond just workforce, Jennifer.
Yes.
For me, you can't just think about individuals as workers. So that's why we're going to be working a lot on civic engagement. We can't build an inclusive economy without an inclusive democracy.
I want to ask you specifically about Lewiston, because I think sort of to many people who might just pass through Lewiston, the face of the kind of business development is Lisbon Street Corridor that you mentioned, where there's so many stores that have African names and African wares in the windows. What are we not seeing? What kind of difference in the Lewiston-Auburn economy have the immigrants made? Where are people working? What kind of businesses are being started?
Yes. You know, there are a lot of ethnic-owned businesses, particularly they're concentrated around Lisbon Street. What we're not seeing is how much they contribute into the economy. We don't see that. Immigrants are people who, in most cases, are very isolated from the larger population, and therefore they keep it to themselves. They're peaceful people for the most part. They're innocent, you know, they're trying to integrate. And so what they do is they mind their own business, meaning they go to school, they're peaceful, they go to work. And so what we don't see, what the public doesn't see, is how many people are hired by those businesses, how much merchandise that's brought into the state of Maine, the quality of foods and spices and specialized foods that they have, the halal markets that are up all the clothing. I mean, nobody needs Walmart in our community. I'm telling you that because we everything that you need, you get from those stores. And yet they are a big, big contributor into the community. So when people move in, we ask donations, you know, people who don't speak English, people who are not necessarily trained, people who are not necessarily educated, they work at those stores. They are a very huge economic machine, both in Lewiston, Auburn, in Portland, and everywhere else. And the larger public doesn't see that. And just one more advocacy that I want to do is I like the idea of really investing into the immigrants, investing into the young population. We do have a lot of foreign-trained workers, and they're very good. But how about all those young mothers who may not necessarily be educated? We need to have specialized, tailored training at the state level and at different levels that can bring these people up to speed so that they can go to work. And that is also a huge population that we often miss.
And one of the reasons I asked you this question, Fatuma, is we've had a owner of a manufacturing firm on this program, a high-end shoe manufacturer, talk about how valuable the immigrant workers are in his community. And I'm wondering, is it just his company, or if we were to open the doors of manufacturing facilities throughout the Lewiston-Auburn area, would we find people who have...
Absolutely. You'll see people working at the Hilton. You'll see people working. I mean, it's like all these mothers and all these people are all over the place. And I don't think, you know, the major corporations and the major companies, when you go to places, you're seeing all these immigrant mothers. They may or may not speak English, but they're working and they work so hard.
We're going to take another quick break, but first, a word about tomorrow's show. We are going to learn about the world of fiber arts in Maine and how wide-reaching it is. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to your Facebook page. Today, we're talking about the immigrant experience in Maine. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Ogunquit Playhouse production of the Tony Award-winning musical Jersey Boys through October 28th. Tickets at ogunquitplayhouse.org. And Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com.
On the next Speaking in Maine, getting to the root of mass atrocities.
They're not crazy people who do these crimes. They're not evil people. They're calculated people in developed countries.
Steve Rapp comes to us from The Hague in the Netherlands. He's joining us at the Claremont Hotel in Southwest Harbor to talk about the warning signs of genocides like the Holocaust and how we can fulfill the promise of never again. That's coming up on Speaking in Maine. Thursday afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
Coming up shortly after Maine Calling here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public will be at this year's Common Ground Fair in Unity, Maine, later this week, Friday through Sunday. Join us as we take part in this annual celebration of rural living. Throughout the fair, Maine Public staff and on-air hosts will be there to meet you and answer any questions or hear your comments about our radio, television, and online services. Our booth is out in front of the exhibition hall. You'll find some information about the fair at mainepublic.org. We hope to see you there.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, immigrants as part of Maine's greater community. Joining us today, Fatuma Hussein with the Immigrant Resource Center, Alan Nahamani with the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center, and Reza Jalali, a community activist, educator, and writer. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Reza, before the break, we were talking about the impact on the economy, and you said there's a recent report that gives us a few numbers, sort of quantifying the impact of new Mainers in the state.
Absolutely. And according to this report, Mainers in immigrant-led households, for example, had $953.9 million in spending power. This is after tax income just in the year 2014. And also as consumers, immigrants add hundreds of million dollars to Maine's economy every year. Other examples include even unauthorized, undocumented immigrants in Maine paying an estimated $245 million in federal taxes and another $116 million in state and local taxes in 2014. Or another example, 2,245 immigrant business owners accounted for 2.2% of all self-employed Mainers, generating more than $48 million in business income. I think that's what Fatuma was touching on, that when immigrants start businesses, they also create employment for non-immigrants. So we are not here to steal jobs. In fact, we are here to generate and create jobs.
We'll go to Con, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Con. How are you?
Hi, Jen. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Reza. Hi, Fatuma. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Con.
Go ahead.
I'm just calling to make those of you who are not aware out there, Radio Land of PCINTU, which is Maine's multinational immigrant and refugee girls chorus. We've been in existence for 13 years and had hundreds of girls from many, many countries come through the chorus. 85% of all of these kids in the chorus have gone on to college. We've been on the Today Show, Voice of America, National Public Radio, Al Jazeera. We're about to go to Nassau Coliseum to play for 40,000 people in November. And this chorus is the embodiment of the power of the immigrant in Maine and the power of currently we have 34 girls from 19 countries singing in the chorus.
Con, when can someone see a concert here in Maine?
You know, we are working on putting that together on our website. I'm afraid that I'm not horribly diligent at that. And a lot of the shows we do, as Rachel will know, are sort of on demand. But I will make certain that
there's one coming up in Brunswick, Maine at St. Paul's Church that I remember and recall.
Okay, Con, I'm giving you an assignment now. This is Con Fulham. We've worked together at a job in the past, and I want you to figure that out and put it on our Facebook page, okay?
I shall.
Thank you for calling in. We'll go to Chris, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Hi, panel. I came here from Scotland to via Spain. I was in Spain for 2 years. Arrived here on Sunday River Beto 26 years ago. I used to run the cabinet shop. Subsequently got a job for a cabinet company in Scarborough, Maine, who used to do the installation work for a big supermarket chain that were buying up supermarkets in New York and down in North Carolina. Eventually, I worked for them for years, and all the top brass from the smart company would come and talk to me, and I found out I was not getting promotion to run the actual jobs when we were down in the Carolinas and New York, because my Scottish accent, according to the manager, would make me come across as thick and stupid. So I was a victim of racism, and I just don't get it with some of the main people. They need to get out and they need to travel. I worked in Spain. Some of my best friends were from Morocco. They were Islamic people, some of the nicest people you can meet. And what the people need to get this in their head. They should make a documentary that it doesn't matter what color you are, what religion you are, where you're from. People are people. Mm. People love. People cry. People live. People die. People laugh. People are people. And we should just get over this. People need to travel more and experience more of the world. Thankfully, I got over this racist thing. I managed to get another job at a great company. And my previous boss, who denied the racist statement, he did give me, upon my insistence, full medical coverage for my family until my new job, until my new medical coverage for my new company kicked in. Otherwise, I would have taken this further.
So you've experienced both.
It was a really sour kind of thing for introduction to Maine. You know, I was really kind of very disappointed.
Oh, well, thank you, Chris. And what Chris speaks to, you all were all three nodding as he spoke. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. We're going to go to Chris in Augusta. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for doing this show. It's a great show. I'm calling to talk about the immigrant community that's growing in Augusta. I know you mentioned that there are some immigrants in lots of small towns, but of course, the focus is on Lewiston and Portland, but we have a growing immigrant population here in Augusta, primarily from the Middle East, from Iraq and Syria. And I work with a group called the Capillarian New Mainers Project. We work with Fatuma and Alan, and we had the Pacintu Chorus come do an event in Augusta last fall. So we're working in collaboration with many of the immigrant groups here to help find ways for immigrants to thrive in Central Maine. And we've had a lot of great success here in Augusta with our organization and in partnership with folks around the state.
Thanks, Chris, for calling in and telling us about Augusta. We're going to go to C, who writes an email. Hey there, I'm a young white American, born Maine farmer, who loves seeing the diversity occurring among our population and the culture immigrants bring with them. The incredible food traditions from the Somali farmers and from friends who are Afghani refugees are incredible. However, I recognize not all Mainers embrace this change as I do. And I'm wondering if your panel has suggestions for how to be a good ally. How do I offer jobs with necessary support systems to immigrants, overcoming language barriers, offering anti-bias and microaggression awareness training? Are there other mechanisms of support I can offer as an employer? Sounds like C already has some ideas. What would you all add to anyone who really just kind of wants to be an ally? What do you recommend?
I think schools are the best place where acceptance and inclusion comes naturally with kids. I mean, you have many of the schools I know now that have started immigration kind of clubs where they will get people from the immigrant community to come and talk to them. We have this, I don't remember the school, Breakwater School. We have a group of students who organized the fundraising. We have this young man, Makai, who made T-shirts and brought a $600 in cash as a donation that the T-shirt he sold to support the center. And his group was only white kids. That school doesn't have a lot of immigrants. They were so interested. They knew a lot about immigrants and younger kids. They meet other places. So now we think about an employer. If you have 20 employees, all of them are white, maybe all of them are male, you need to knock your head and say something's wrong here. You need to intentionally say, I need to change because I need to reflect and walk the talk. It's easy to say I support immigrants, but what are you doing? In between attacks on immigrants, where everybody goes out and go rally, what do you do in between to make sure there's inclusion and diversity? You may say, we are going to try to hire this number of immigrants. Celebrating immigration without coming up, okay, what did you achieve in the last year? How did you improve diversity in organization? would just be not getting anywhere. You need, people need, and I'm just the sentence I use all the time, walk the talk. People are so good, but walk the talk. Do something in addition to change where you live and the community you live.
We'll go to Marty in South Portland. Hi, Marty. If you could be quick, that would be great.
I sure can. I work at the mall, and I regularly meet people from all around the world. And one of the wonderful things is hearing somebody chit-chatting as they approach where I'm at, picking up what language they're speaking, and greeting them in their native tongue. There was one time a couple of young ladies were walking by, and I said, "Privet, how you speak Russian?" And that started a wonderful friendship. Every couple of months, they'd stop by to say hi. They moved away, and a year or so ago, I saw one of them again walking by. Said, "Hold it." I went over in the aisle to greet her, and I said, "Oh, geez, now what do?" I opened my arms wide. She gave me a bear hug. I found out later she'd only been in the States 2 months when I first greeted them. Everybody can be an ally to those who are visiting from away.
Marty, thanks so much for your call. We will go to Philmon calling from Portland. Hi, Philmon. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you very much. I'm calling in to give some thought for, some thought from my experience. I'm an immigrant as well, and I'm from Burundi. I know very well Alan is my friend, and I know Fatuma Hossein too. What I have to say here, it's I will say that I've heard Alan and Fatuma Hossein saying that English it's one of the first barrier, and I agree with that. But I think in terms of workforce in Maine, we just focus on one point, which is I think employers in Maine. This is from my experience. I think that employers in Maine need to raise a little bit their awareness about what's happening here, because we have a lot of people here who are speaking very well English, but who lack the experience, I would say the American working experience, and who really need a little bit ride. I'm calling that ride to gain some experience and to work as at their full potential.
Philmon, thank you so much for calling and sharing your perspective. Unfortunately, we've just run out of time, but a really terrific final call to end on and food for thought. And thank you to our guests here in the studio. Reza Jalali is a longtime Maine resident, is an educator, writer, and community activist. Fatuma Hussein, community leader who founded the Immigrant Resource Center of Maine, based in Lewiston. And Alain Nahimana, the executive director of the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Our volunteer Rick Austin took your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Maine's Fiber Arts Community. Jennifer Rooks, you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.